This week in the parish of Bourses and Market Structure, CFTC is all politics and no markets. Yield Curve Connect improves. The Australian parliamentary feedback on the ASX serial failure of the chess mess makes for some gruesome reading. And LSEG reckons its IPO pipeline is growing. The trouble is, the world's market leaders Nasdaq and NYSE have a faucet that just keeps flowing. My name is Patrick L. Young. Welcome to the Bourse Business Weekly Digest. It's the Exchange Invest Weekly podcast, episode 245. Good day, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very brief reduction in highlights. Amongst the key headlines from the week in market structure, all the analysis of the many events and happenings from the past 7 days can be found in Exchange Invest's daily subscriber newsletter, the unique guide to the bourse business, sent daily to your inbox. More details at exchangeinvest.com. Welcome, incidentally, ladies and gentlemen, to Exchange Invest's 11th year. Are you gaining a daily seat at the water cooler of the bourse business, the exchange of information? If not, you should be thinking about subscribing right now. This podcast is only the barest of tasters of what we have in pith every single day of the working week from Monday through Friday, 52 weeks a year. That is the exchange of information itself, Exchange Invest, which has surpassed its 2,968th edition this week with readers from all over the world. The parish readership continues to grow, but likewise, we're always keen to add more. Pop over to exchangeinvest.com today, celebrate our 11th anniversary, and get yourself a subscription to Exchange Invest at exchangeinvest.com. Only $375 per user year. Meanwhile, in bit carnage, SBF finds himself still in pure play guilt denial and is busy giving himself some sustenance by trading rice in jail. You may recall we discussed the fiscal outlook for SBF's dealings during his sentence in our free Exchange Invest Weekend Edition 2898, which looked at mackerel, stamp books and more being discussed as the currency of prisons, even if tobacco has been reduced in importance thanks to smoke-free jails in the United States of America, leading to the great ramen noodle swap post-US prison tobacco ban in 2015. If you enjoy this excerpt, you may be interested to know you can read Bit Carnage every day in Exchange Invest. Alternatively, if you want to follow Bit Carnage, the daily update on happenings in the market infrastructure world of crypto and digital assets, you can find BitCarnage as a standalone on Substack. This week in the big world of exchanges, China and Hong Kong have enhanced Swap Connect's scheme for the first birthday, easing access to mainland interbank derivatives. No scheme could hope for a better first birthday present, a handy expansion of linkages with reduced complexity and serial potential benefits to all end users, with significantly more steps being made towards the yuan holy grail, the RMB yield curve, in a full suite of exchange-traded derivatives, which will be a most exciting launch for the Hong Kong Exchanges Group. Good week all round for Hong Kong, hot on the heels of a terrific inaugural Tadawul Hong Kong Exchanges Cooperation and a mega conference in the SAR, was another MOU being signed with the Qatar Stock Exchange. While there's optimism, big IPOs are on their way back to HKEX after a period relatively in the doldrums. Over in Europe, SIBO, they've launched a push to attract retail investors across the European continent. The lesser spotted continental European retail investor makes up about 14.14% of EU stock business and is broadly herbivore. The US greater spotted retail investor is a significantly larger appetite carnivore and takes up to 40% of the significantly larger in its own right US share trading capacity. Good luck to SIBO. Here's hoping the Europeans can manage to find their risk mojo, although I'm rather pessimistic in the current circumstances. The London Stock Exchange says their IPO is building up, but at the same time, in Britain, pension folks are worried about more lax listing regulations, where a panicked LSEG notes nothing has improved in listing rules in 40 years. The realpolitik is the investors are risk-off and the brokers are too short-term. The exchange has made a model of leading thought, and thus London is becalmed. At the same time, we can compare that to the US, which still has, frankly, onerous rules as a result of the Togur Party years during the 1990s when Bernie Ebers and others partied as an American Rome burned. But thanks to all the other advantages of the USA, sunny optimism, walls of money, a risk-on attitude, oh, plus a wall of money that can be stacked at a meaningful width into orbit, the problem is the US pipeline just keeps growing. Every day, the chasm between the UK and the EU grows in capital markets, but at the same time, an even greater chasm is growing while the US reigns supreme between itself and anything across the Atlantic. The City of London is now a bickerfest between a group of risk-averse investors and a short-termist, rather limited mindset group of brokers with the most dismally oblivious to markets LSE management team perhaps in its history. Something has to give, the worry is, with Argentina fighting to be a proper economy these days, the UK may be ideally placed to be the next Argentina, although it does face tough competition to the east within multiple European Union nations.
Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly. We welcome your feedback. You can contact me directly, patrick@derivativesvision.com, with any comments. Meanwhile, if you enjoyed this show, we would welcome you giving us a thumbs up. Or if you have time, a positive review will always be welcome, wherever you find this podcast.
In results, a very busy week for results in the parish. All the details were in Exchange Invest Daily, the newsletter no person can be afford to be without in capital markets and market structure. For the sake of this podcast, let's look at some edited highlights. Ducks of the week, the Tadawul, Saudi Tadawul, stunning the market with net income up no less than 122%. Pretty decent numbers all round at the same time from the BSE, formerly the Bombay Stock Exchange. They added their name to the 20% plus club in Q1, alongside, of course, not just Tadawul, but SIBO, ICE, NASDAQ, MCX of India, and more. In deals, it was not such a busy week for deals per se, but one interesting note, the Japanese Stock Exchange Group, or at least I should call it the Japanese Exchange Group, JPX, they are having a stock split 2-for-1 to end up with 1 billion and change outstanding shares effective from October the 1st. The exchanges are retaining headroom as well, with authorised shares also doubling up to well over 4 billion shares. At the same time, there's some sad news emerged. It turned out a report in the AFR told us that, tragically, a group of Australian super fund managers blinked and didn't go about buying the ASX, just as the ASX's credibility continues to plunge. The only optimism might be the funds group, say, putting in a bid for FEX Global and competing with the ASX that way. Australia desperately needs a proper exchange leading the nation's capital markets, as there is a painful void at the top, with Chi-X SIBO doing a great job pushing the shambolic incumbent, albeit from a very, very difficult standpoint. If you're trying to understand what are the dynamics of those very difficult standpoints for competing in markets with regulatory affairs, you ought to consider a copy of my most recent book, Victory or Death, Blockchain, Cryptocurrency and the FinTech World. That's published by ADV Books, available in good bookshops everywhere, as well as being online, distributed via Ingram Worldwide. While you're waiting for your copy of Victory or Death to arrive, check out our live stream, Tuesdays, 5 o'clock London, a midday New York time. It's the IPO Video Live Show. You can catch the back episodes on LinkedIn and YouTube via IPO-Vid. Now online, we've got episode number 143 with our guest Tapelo Chole. We were discussing Botswana Rising with the former CEO of the Botswana Stock Exchange, a man who in 8 years managed to take the amount of retail investors, the total quantity, it was a paucity of 23,000 originally, he took that up fivefold, in excess of 100,000 investors from a population of 2.6 million people in just 8 years. It's an epic interview, really, really well worth a listen. Coming up on Tuesday, we're going to have an interview which is going to be delving all the way into a famous Southeast Asian-based trader, although he's looking at world markets. Guest is going to be Jason Sen for the, well, appropriately enough, Fibonacci number 144, or GAN number, I suppose you might prefer to call it, A Seasoned Trader Speaks. That's with Jason Sen coming up on Tuesday at 5 o'clock London time, 6 o'clock Central European time, midday Eastern Standard Time in the USA. Our finance book of the week this week is The Last Best Hope, A History of American Realism. It's a brilliant exploration of American history and contemporary conservative politics, providing a practical, realist foreign policy for a new age of American politics. Lest you don't read him already, the author, John Hulsman, is that thing we love in geopolitical analysis, a winner and not a windbag. His record is second to none in accurately assessing outcomes, and that makes The Last Best Hope a must-read as the neocon delusion dies and the failures of Democratic foreign policy are writ large from the fringes of the US border outwards into the world. It's time for realism, ladies and gentlemen. Come what may in the next general election in America, read this book. If you'd like to get up to date with what's happening in our book recommendations, don't forget we have them first a week before this podcast in our Exchange Invest Weekend Edition. Catch that. It comes out every Saturday. It's free publication altogether. You can sign up at exchangeinvest.com. Technology news this week. The Australian Parliamentary Chess Mess Committee have published some of their submissions. The chess fiasco festers along, as does the simmering resentment of everybody who isn't a member of the ASX Border Management, with all those who are members of the ASX Border Management. The comments that have been submitted so far are the usual range, with some self-justification, such as from Digital Asset, the vendor paid a couple hundred million dollars in order to ultimately end up being unable to deliver anything due to the bigger fest which the chess mess became. And then it goes all the way to the coherent messaging of settlement professionals at Computershare, noting, in their opinion, what an amateur shambles the ASX has become. That this letter is co-signed by Paul Conn, who was also, of course, our IPO vid guest on episode 79 when we were discussing around the world from front office to back. Paul, after all, cut his teeth in Australia after a career in London, enjoying the experience of working with sound, structured professionals like Angus Richards and Rory Collins at ASX, to name but two of a highly cohesive team which could upgrade a tech stack across all markets. Perhaps the most magnificent contribution, however, so far has been a cri de coeur incorporating a surgical excoriation of the ASX failure at management and board level for years on end. That's submission number 12 from academics Helen Bird and William Klein, and is a must read in its own right. Regulation news this week. Well, we had Chairman Gensler making some comments about data. Most notably, and I quote, "Since antiquity, finance has been about the pricing and allocation of money and risk throughout the economy. There are those who have money and who want to invest it. Others need money to fund good ideas, buy a house, or help get through life's inevitable challenges. There are those who have risk but don't want to bear it, and others willing to take on that risk. Finance sits in the middle, like the neck of an hourglass, whose grains of sand are money and risk. Finance depends on data." That was in an address discussing the SEC data and the public good, which came before the 11th Annual Conference on Financial Market Regulation of the SEC in Washington, D.C. the other week. Meanwhile, the SEBI, a regulator in India, have banned an SME firm from capital markets for misusing IPO proceeds. SEBI, the order notes, bans Veranium Cloud from the securities markets due to misused IPO funds, questionable financial statements and stock manipulation. Other than this, can we presume the firm is doing okay on corporate governance? CFTC, they were the major disappointment of the week. They issued a proposal on event contracts, which is basically a big fat nyeh. Or a big fat nyet, I suppose one might actually manage to say, from the Soviet standpoint of how this order looks, a proposal in the best possible sense of totalitarian dogma. It's a blanket ban on progress for risk management, which might have been a better description. That led to a bit of a statement storm, and certainly there is no change from the stubborn ignorance of the Kalshi ban in prediction markets last year from Chairman Rostan Benham. It's still enormously disappointing. We really cannot wait, even if it's another term for Joe Brezhnev, for this current commission to be replaced. It's been a very, very disappointing time with Benham as chairman. At the same time, it just shows how bad Chairman Benham has been that Commissioner Pham manages to look incredibly erudite and intelligent by calling for the CFTC needing to get serious and offering a strategic plan for reform. Quite incredible. The femme fatale is actually saying, with what isn't dissent, is actually excoriation of the CFTC. She's calling for the GAO, that's the Government Audit Office, to have a study and provide recommendations for improvement of the CFTC's operations. Our prediction, somebody's going to be walking the plank in the near future from this commission, if not most of the commissioners themselves. It's a very, very sad demise of the CFTC commission under Chairman Benham, and it makes the TLD Biden administration look almost competent by comparison, which is quite an achievement. In happier news, let's jump to career paths. There's been an appointment of a new chairman of the Monetary Authority of Singapore Board of Directors. All change in Singapore this week. PM Lee Hsien Loong has retired after 20 years as Prime Minister, heralding a large upheaval in government as he hands over to DPM Lawrence Wong, who was therefore previously chairman of the MAS Board of Directors. And in his stead, Gan Kim Yong, the new Minister for Trade and Industry, will be appointed for the term 15th of May 2024 to 31st of May 2026. One big resignation this week, a large fanfare marked the arrival of Murray Roos 5 years ago at the London Stock Exchange. Stony silence from LSEG greets his departure. I'm not really sure what to make of this, apart from the narrative that the LSEG has certainly lost its way in markets. Dan Maguire will apparently now serve as both head of post-trade and capital markets of the Exchange Group, further expanding his brief, which began with LSCH and expanded to Group Chief Strategy Officer at the start of this year. In big world, there was a headline recently in the Financial Times. It's been backed up by other similar articles championing the rebirth of Europe and the Eurozone. Germany propels Eurozone growth to 0.3%. Propels? I think they actually mean Germany pancakes or Germany piffles Eurozone growth to 0.3%. There's a paucity of evidence for forward propulsion in the European Union's economic orbit right now. More's the pity. However, the notion that 0.3% can propel anything apart from poverty is a construct only the Brussels Bugle could deploy while defending their, well, core subscriber base, and indeed also outside of Brussels, the ongoing German economic mean reversion. The really big story during the course of this week has been another triumph in Buenos Aires. President Milei is clearly managing to blaze a trail, even without a parliamentary monopoly. Interest rates have come down to 40% from 50% in the sixth cut since President Milei came to power in December, at which point rates had stood at 133%. Inflation, incidentally, peaked. It was 25.5% when he arrived in office and is now down to 8.8%, albeit this being Argentina. Alas, that's 8.8% per month. However, nonetheless, even lacking a majority in Parliament, this nation is making vast progress. Can free trade, open markets, and generally endorsing capitalism still have a role to play in the world of government? Nobody seems to have told President Milei this view is painfully out of fashion in many Western capitals. After 5 months, Milei has done more for Argentina's economic outlook than any president has managed in Buenos Aires for generations. The outlook could yet be in the pink, coming from the Casa Rosada. And on that mysterious and magnificent note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to this Exchange Invest podcast number 245. Join us daily via exchangeinvest.com for the exchange of information, the water cooler of the bourse business, or if you have a new exchange you'd like built, get in touch. My name is Patrick L. Young, and I wish you a great week in life and markets. This show relates to the business of bourses. It is not to be construed as investment advice, nor are we making any investment recommendations. Please consult an investment advisor before you make any investments, and for goodness sake, do your due diligence and do not make investments without complying with the regulations in your home state. Exchange Invest cannot be held responsible for any investment decisions made as a result of our program, which is for entertainment purposes only. The material herein is copyright Patrick L. Young at the date of publication, while our music and sound effects are sourced from copyright-free sources. Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly, the exchange of information.